This is the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. on www.prn.fm. This radio presentation replays my weekly TV show, Refounding America with Peter R. Breggin, MD, which can be watched on Brighteon.tv, and it's available on Roku. I interview guests who are heroes and pioneers in confronting the global predators who are behind COVID-19 lockdowns and vaccines, corrupt public health and medicine, global warming, the Great Reset, and other justifications for destroying the Western democracies. They are stealing our countries, our freedoms, our dignity and hope, and our jobs and our savings. For documentation of this worldwide tragedy, read our new book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, by Peter and Ginger Breggin. Together, my guests and I explore what is happening and what we each can do to refound America and inspire the world. Thank you for your courage in facing these challenges and standing up for liberty. Oh, hello, my wonderful, wonderful audience. This is a real joy to be with you on Brighteon TV and to be sitting here with a man I admire so deeply, Vladimir Zev Zelenko, MD. This is going to be a stunning show. He is a tremendously thoughtful human being. And if I don't make this one of the most interesting shows you've ever listened to, I've failed. So I'm setting the standard for me, not for Zev, because he will just express himself and be himself. And it's most amazing to be with him. It's an honor. And again, I'm really, I'm a little nervous today. I'm excited. The first show we had got cut short for technical problems, so this is going to be the first completed new show with Dr. Peter Breggin, Refounding America. Welcome back to Refounding America and Refounding Ourselves with Peter Breggin and Zev Zelenko. When I look back in history and I try to imagine who does Zev remind me of, who in history touches me the way Zev Zelenko does and touches other people the way Zev does, and what I come up with, and it makes him feel a little awkward, is Jeremiah the prophet, the great Hebrew prophet. And this is a picture of Jeremiah from a great Belgian church. Jeremiah lived at a time of huge turmoil for the Jewish people. The world was pretty much in turmoil too. And eventually the temple was destroyed and the Jews were spread into Babylonia. And it was a catastrophe for Judah. And during this time, he warned about it again and again, and he talked about how God was just not happy with how his people were behaving. When I went back to look at this, again at Jeremiah, when I decided that I was going to talk about him as the intro to my guest, to Dr. Zelenko, I was reading Jewish and Christian comments, and they said, well, although he warned and he railed about the dangers, he was optimistic, and they cited a passage in the Bible. So I went to the passage, and we can pull that up. I won't be able to quote it, but the passage basically says everything's going to work out all right because our enemies will be disgraced and humiliated, and their dishonor never forgotten. So this is really the kind of world we are actually struggling with now. We really do have a good and evil struggle going on. And Zev was talking about this. And by the way, Zev has written one of the three introductions to the book I've written with my wife. COVID-19 and the Global Predators. And the book is a bestseller now. We've sold 60,000 copies already, and it's only been up on Amazon 2 months. You can get it on Amazon and elsewhere. Zev, in his introduction, is apocalyptic in the sense that I'm describing, but his heart's full of love. So, Zev, welcome to the show. You're such a dear human being. I'm just so privileged to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. And, you know, my wife may have a different opinion about your prophetic strength, but, you know, she may say that you're fueling my delusions of grandeur. So,
I think that actually Zev has probably saved maybe even millions of lives. There's no way to calculate this. Zev was the first doctor to put together what became known as the Zelenko Protocol for the early treatment, the early successful treatment of COVID-19. And he spread that around the world. And one of the interesting stories, maybe you could tell us again about how you ended up getting the ear of President Trump and convincing him that there were treatments, despite what Fauci was saying, that there were treatments for COVID-19.
Well, what happened was I found myself in the epicenter of the largest outbreak of COVID-19 in the first week of March of 2020, with thousands of sick patients. I'm a primary care doctor for a community in upstate New York of 35,000 people that live within a square mile radius. So it's a very high population density. So when COVID arrived, it spread to everyone. Thousands of people were sick and we had no treatment. So they say necessity is the mother of all innovation. And I really found myself in a helpless situation where my patients were looking at me. You know, I've been their doctor for 20 years for help, and I had nothing to offer them except go home, take Tylenol, drink fluids. If you get sicker, go to the hospital, end up on a respirator. And 80% of the people at that time were dying. And so I was praying to God. I really didn't know what else to do. And then it was at 2 o'clock in the morning, I remember. And next thing I know, I see in my email a link to a video from YouTube by called MedCram Episode 34. And it's a very high level of continuing medical education lectures. And on that particular episode talked about zinc ionophores and zinc and their inhibition of viral RNA, viral replication. And that seemed like a brilliant idea. And so that was the spark that helped me develop the protocol. Now, when I started using it, and let me just define what I was doing. I was identifying high-risk patients, and that I did by calling the ICU doctors in the local hospitals and asking them which patients are dying. And they told me that the elderly patients and those with medical problems. I said, what about patients that are younger or healthy? They said, we're not seeing them. So I knew right away that this virus doesn't kill equally. And so just keep in mind, my practice used to see 50 patients a day. And then I was seeing now 250 patients a day. It was overwhelming. And the hospitals were at near capacity. Outpatient services like radiology and blood work were closed. Half my staff was sick. It was a mass casualty event. It was like a bomb went off. And so I couldn't treat everyone. So I figured out who was at risk and who's not. I sent the low risk patients home, 2/3 basically. And then I dedicated my resources to the higher risk patients. And I started to treat them in the first, basically when they presented to my office. If I thought that they had COVID, I would do the testing. But at that time it took a week to get the results, but I would treat them right away. I wouldn't wait for the condition, for the disease to spread and get worse, because by the time I got the results, which was a week later, the patients were half dead. And so it didn't make sense to me to let them fester and get sicker. I just treated them based on intuition and clinical judgment. And then I used the antiviral approach, which I developed. After the first, you know, 10, 15 patients, I thought, this is unbelievable. It's literally unbelievable, because from 6 to 12 hours after starting treatment, their breathing was improving. I didn't believe it either. You know, I thought it was a fluke. But
were you, Zev, were you using hydroxychloroquine then? You mentioned that you're using zinc. And what else were you using?
Yeah, I was using hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and azithromycin.
Azithromycin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never said it was the best treatment. I only said it was the only treatment at that time. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, you know, as you know, medicine is a living, breathing thing. We get new information, new treatment modalities, and it's important for a good doctor to be nimble and flexible and be able to incorporate new information in the treatment plan in order to give patients the best care at any moment in time. And so subsequently, I added many other medications. But at that slice in time, I was just using hydroxychloroquine, which helped the zinc get into the cell. The zinc would inhibit viral replication. The antibiotics prevent secondary lung infections. And so after 50 patients or so, when I saw the same pattern, at this time I realized it's not a fluke. And I realized that I had found potentially one of the solutions to this terrible crisis, right? The whole world was locked down in fear and literally locked down. No one knew anything. I was going to work thinking it was going to be my last day alive. And I had cancer, I was on chemo, one lung, and I'm going into the lion's den of infections. And so it was really a frightening time, for myself included. And when I saw that there's a potential treatment and that there may be hope, I made a video with the help of my son addressed to the President of the United States. And I said, President Trump, I need your help. This is what I'm seeing. I think it's important. I think you need to know about it. Well, 16 hours later, Mark Meadows, the President's Chief of Staff, calls me on my cell phone. Now, you can't make this stuff up. You know, if it didn't happen to me, I wouldn't believe it. But the Chief of Staff of the President of the United States calls me. His office is right next to the Oval Office. And he says, Dr. Zelenko, the President wants to know what you need. You know, you're looking for the President. I said, yeah, what I'm seeing is this, and I think you should know about it. And I think we need resources dedicated here to see if there's any validity here, right? They were very interested, and I had their contact information, and I was updating them every few days. And then Rudy Giuliani called me, and we did a podcast. And that podcast became viral. Millions of people saw it. And then my life has never been the same since. I went from obscurity, an upstate, small town, country doctor, to dealing with the world stage and having governments contact me and heads of state. And then all the vicious attacks started with the media and the political ramifications of what I was doing. And so it was a very quick, I was thrown into the deep end of the pool and was told to learn how to swim. And that's what happened. So,
do you have any thoughts about just briefly about why the president, after learning these things from you and even going on it as a prophylaxis successfully on hydroxychloroquine, why did he give in to the hate that was being directed at him? That hate, by the way, is really based on two principles. The vast powers that Ginger and I describe in COVID-19 and the global predators, they want two things. They want to stuff themselves with more wealth through vaccines. And they want to use the vaccines as a weapon of totalitarianism to justify crushing the democracies of the West. And I know that's a lot for those of you who haven't heard about this before, but we'll be discussing this at various times over the year, and we've written about it, now other people are writing about it. Do you have any idea specifically what he went through in giving up his support of hydroxy? I know he tried to release the huge stores of hydroxy, and then Rick Bright, who was a global predator, who was at BARDA, intervened and wouldn't. BARDA is the agency that was funding the drug companies for their vaccines, pre-selected vaccines. The Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine were selected in 2015 by Bill Gates to be the vaccines, and he made them the vaccines to make him wealthier, more powerful, and all his cohorts. Very brief context. But do you have any idea what What may have affected the president to just cave in and become a great supporter of the vaccines and give up on hydroxychloroquine?
I know precisely what happened, and I know when it happened. Sometime mid-May, he got very, very, very bad advice from his advisors. And it was right before an election, and there was a political calculation made that going towards the vaccine approach would optimize the likelihood of re-election. And hydroxychloroquine had been successfully vilified that it became politically radioactive. And so it was a sabotage that then led to the president being given horrific advice, which dedicated the administration's resources and efforts towards the vaccine development. So that's what happened.
Do you think it was a political decision, which that he was told and he believed mistakenly, I think, that, you know, that he'd get more easily elected by supporting the vaccines? And what happens to human beings? I mean, one of the things that you and I have developed our lives to speaking the truth. We've always believed that, I think, since we were young. And I've been a reformer since I was in high school, really. My wife, Ginger, been a reformer since she was in junior high school, changing her community. What happens? Is it possible to become somebody powerful without becoming somebody corrupt?
You know, only if you are truly divinely inspired and your motivations and passions in life are those to sanctify the name of God and his creation, and not to sanctify your own name and propagate your narcissistic tendencies. Normal people don't try to become president. I mean, you have to be to have some type of narcissistic personality disorder, in my opinion, and go through that abuse. So, you know, it's a position that is very difficult for decent, normal people to attain. Now, I think President Trump, not that he gave up his belief in the need for pre-hospital care, because that's just common sense. But I think he made a calculation is that I can do more good if I get reelected. So let's table that for now, get reelected, and then revisit the issue when I don't have to fight a political war. Now, it's a rational approach, but I think he was deceived. Now, at this point, he still supports the vaccines, and that's where I have to.
Yeah.
That's why I have to diverge from him, because it is obvious to anyone who has looked at the data honestly that they realize that these COVID-19 vaccines are not medically necessary, they're not efficacious, they don't work, and their safety profiles are absolutely horrific. So,
you've called it mass murder. I mean, the rates of death from the vaccines are hundreds of times more than other vaccines. Other vaccines would have been taken off the market for 20 deaths or maybe 30 or 40 deaths at the most, investigated, pulled off the market. And we've got a vaccine, we're talking about reported deaths, that has reported deaths that are approaching 20,000 or exceeding it now. So just in the U.S. Data. So well, one of the things that I think is so important is, you know, much of my life I was an agnostic, and I know you were until you went to Israel before med school, I guess.
I was an atheist, not agnostic.
Yeah, well, I was an agnostic. And I go back to the 50s, and it was pretty unusual to be an agnostic. It really set you apart back then. It's unusual to be anything unique back in the 50s and so on. But it's really important that that people realize that the separation now of the armies that are fighting this war, the global predators on the one hand, on the other hand, it is almost entirely right now the leadership, and both Zev and I are Jewish, the leadership is Christians in America. Jeff and I are pretty unusual. Like, there's one other professor who's Jewish. And all of the folks just about believe in God. And setting aside whether God is real or not, the fact of the matter is that when people give up a belief in God, they start believing in themselves as God. And that is a disaster for themselves and for humanity. And I just think that's really a good thing. I had a Catholic patient once, Zev, who many years ago, who felt sad that I was so lonely. I was not happily married and I didn't believe in God. And she said to me, what do you think God is? Or what do you imagine? And I said, I only know he's not me. And she said, you're on the way. You'll get there. You're on the way. And I think that the predators, all of whom we described, the individuals, the leaders, the companies, they all think that in one way or another they're God, and it's a most amazing phenomena. In the next segment, we've got 3 minutes here, 3.5 minutes. It's going so fast. I want to get to talk with you, and we could begin now, about the sense that you have that even though you have an illness that may or may not let you live a long time, now that you've taken stands that have brought great threats on you and on your family, you nonetheless feel, I think, about as satisfied with your life as ever. And I think we should talk with people about that and maybe even begin with a little introduction right now, because Ginger and I feel the same way. We feel that, I don't know that we've reached, I know we haven't reached the inner peace that you talk about, but we just have gotten a lot nearer to the glow than we were before. And I think it would be good to talk about this with people, because as bleak as the world is, there is something wondrous in facing good and evil and saying, okay, I'll do what I can, something along those lines. What are your thoughts, Devin? We've got 2 minutes right now.
I think it's a glorious time to be alive. I think that it's, maybe you're a psychiatrist, maybe you can help me understand the dynamic, but you know, my whole life I was looking for some tranquility and happiness and inner peace, and it was very elusive. And then getting terminal cancer, I got a very rare form of cancer that only 10 people a year on average get, and they're all found at autopsy. And this is 4 years ago. And so the fact that I'm still here talking to you, I've had multiple surgeries and open heart surgeries, and I lost a lung and radiation and chemo, a lot of complications, but.
And Zev, you survived COVID in this condition. That is so important. Using your own therapies, you're in a hospital, but your therapies, you survived COVID.
Yeah, I was pretty sure I was going to leave in a box. The chemo killed my bone marrow. I had no immune system, and it just overran me, which is interesting because for a year I was walking around with no mask. I didn't take the vaccines, obviously. I was seeing patients, and I was fully integrated, and I was fine until the chemo killed my bone marrow, and then I wasn't so fine. And so, that was an experience. But I have to tell you that through all these trials and tribulations and facing death literally 7 times in the last 4 years, somehow coming out on the other end of it, looking back, I've never been as happy as I am now, as calm as I am now, aligned in purpose, feeling that I'm doing what I was created to be doing, and just enjoying the moment and appreciating the infinite value of just being, of life itself. And there's a certain stillness, serene inner stillness that is, I would say in retrospect, worth all the suffering that I've ever been through, just to come to the spiritual and intellectual state of mind that I find myself in now.
All right, folks, we're going to be going to the second segment very quickly, but in that next segment, I'll talk about another hero that I compare to Zev. Well, welcome back to Refounding America and Refounding Ourselves with Peter Bregan and Zev Zelenko, two physicians, one a psychiatrist, one a trained family physician, family medicine. I'm going to do a feature. I'm going to experiment with doing a feature each week at the start of the second segment. And the feature is called David and Goliath Moments. Could we have the and Goliath moments? And if I were to pick another person from history, and it would again be Jewish history, the Bible, the Old Testament, I'd say, all right, David. Now, David, of course, was not nearly such a moral character, but he was much loved by God, despite failings that are out the ceiling. But he stood up to Goliath, of course, and that's a mighty metaphor that has influenced the founding of this country, the founders of this country. It's influenced a lot of folks like me growing up. And have you ever felt like David against Goliath? Goliath being forces so huge that they are beyond even people. They're like this enormous loose organization of predators.
So, well, the Goliath part, I see. David, I don't know. I think that we need a divine scaler to overcome this evil. This is an evil that's been so entrenched for so long that it completely is attacking the consciousness of God in the world. I think there are two systems of thought that have collided and can't coexist. And one system is the belief that we're made in the image of God and that our lives are sanctity and that we have human rights, and it's God's prerogative how many of us live on the planet and for how long. The second system is this pagan eugenics Darwinist approach with the belief in the hierarchy of humanity is based on genetics and survivability and who's the strongest and so on. That inevitably leads to a kind of a system where there's three categories of people. There's the superhumans, like Kant said, the Superman. There's the humans, and then there's the subhumans. Sounds familiar? Because 80 years ago, that was exactly the ideology of the Nazis. They considered themselves the Übermensch, the superhumans, because they believed that they were descendants of the Aryan gods. And the humans were considered Anglo-Saxons, and they were meant to be enslaved to serve the Germans, the Nazis. And the subhumans were us, the Jews, the Slavs, the Gypsies, handicapped people, political prisoners, and so on. And we were meant to be thrown into ovens and become vapor and dust. Now, in this generation, it's the same exact thing, except it's not anti-Semitic. The self-professed superhumans who consider themselves some type of evolved intellectual, lofty, enlightened people, in my opinion, are nothing more than devolved, depraved pagans of yesteryear who worship themselves. And so to any totalitarian movement throughout history, the first thing that they try to do is eliminate God consciousness from society. And the rationale is very simple. If I bow down to God, I will not bow down to them. So what they very carefully have crafted is a global psychosis. Using propaganda and the media, they've propagated irrational fear and anxiety and human isolation from the people we love. Now, if you know any psychological warfare, I mean, that's 101. If you induce anxiety, prolonged anxiety state, and you isolate people from other people, especially loved ones, you cause a psychological decompensation in most people over time. And when someone gets into that state, I can't believe I'm lecturing to psychiatrists, but when someone gets into that state, they become extremely gullible and easy to manipulate. So I can offer them any false promise, let's say the golden calf of the vaccine, and say, this will help you. And I can have incredibly intellectual people, intelligent people, put aside their intellect and gravitate to that false promise simply because they want to reduce the amount of psychological pain that they're in. And if I challenge someone like that and say, well, can you explain to me your rationale? Don't you see this data? They'll become belligerent. And the reason why is not intellectual. Because what I'm doing is essentially bringing them back into that anxiety state that they so desperately don't want to be in anymore. And so it's been a brilliant psyop that has basically is a form of coercion intended to take 7 billion people, like if you listen to the sociopath Bill Gates, that 7 billion people need to take a poison death shot that has no medical necessity, that doesn't work, and has the most horrific side effects that, you know, it's intolerable, it's unacceptable. So that's what I think is going on. And so it's a war for God consciousness. And slavery has historically been the most lucrative commodity and industry in the history of humanity. And it's no different now. There is an attempt now to centralize power by a group of predators, sociopaths, depraved pagans, idol worshippers, and those that sacrifice children, and then use a weapon of eugenics, mass murder, genocide, to commit a crime against humanity on a scale that's never been done before, and which is basically to kill off a large percentage of people. You just have to listen to what these animals say. I mean, if you listen to Bill Gates in 2015 TED lecture, Google it. He said the world population must be reduced to reduce global warming through the use of vaccines. So here's my question. Why would I take a vaccine for my health from a sociopath who's financing and encouraging a depopulation? So
the depth of the Ginger and I were able to track of the interrelationships between people like Fauci, who has been working on these issues for at least 10 years since the 11 years now since the announcement of the decade of vaccines, and working with Klaus Schwab, who was there with Bill Gates when he announced the decade of the vaccines, and later when he announced how he was going to be organizing the world basically in preparation for the next vaccine, and their connections to the World Health Organization and to the UN, and to the bizarre totalitarian claims of UN announcements and pronouncements cloaked as idealism when it's totalitarianism. And then ultimately back to the Chinese Communists, Chinese Communist Party, things I never expected to find before I was doing all this research. And if you go back to verify what you're hearing today from Dr. Zev Zelenko, if you look at the Chinese Communist Party, it has a religion. It is official religion is atheism. It's announced as such. If you look at what their belief is, it's a very extreme form of Darwinism and Marxism mixed together. The communists have killed perhaps just in China 100 million people. Mao and his successors, and also before Mao, there were Chinese emperors who actually had quite organized totalitarian societies. So they're coming from totalitarianism, they're coming from atheism, they're coming from transhumanism, which is the idea that human beings can be made not into the likeness of God, but made into what is desired by the leaders. A fundamental principle of Marxism is that if you use enough threat, enough killing, rampant murder, enough education, rob people of religion, you can turn them into the kinds of obedient, docile human beings that they desire to have and to some extent have created in China. And all this group is marshaled out there and standing fundamentally against them, and Schwab has even written about this, is the United States of America and is the patriotic Judeo-Christian Americans, the people who believe in liberty, the people who believe in the founding of this country, the founders. That's why I call the show and the movement, as I experience, is the refounding of America. that this is, these are really fundamental truths that can help you understand. Now, what I want to also do is to talk more about how it can help you feel more alive and may help you feel more, as Ev is describing, where he has been under so many different pressures, but he is in his spirit thriving. And by the way, Zev, I think you're making fun of me when you say I'm a psychiatrist, because you and I know psychiatrists are just teaching a materialistic religion, you know, a biological. Psychiatry is one of the forerunners. When I was criticizing psychosurgery and stopped it around the world, basically, almost entirely back in the 70s, I didn't realize Ginger more recently pointed out to me that was transhumanism. The ultimate at that point in time in transhumanism was to put electrodes in people's heads and stimulate their brains and melt their brains, including little children, many little children. So I guess there's two things I want to cover briefly as we in the last 10 minutes. One is the attack on the children. We are really sacrificing our children on a, it's really on the altar of government. I think the reason why this is being insisted on, well, I kind of know the reason why it's being insisted on, because if they can break us in relation to our children, if we will do this stupid, senseless, useless, destructive thing to our children, who would do much better if they had COVID-19 parties, like kids used to have parties for some of the communicable diseases, and, you know, spread it around among themselves and keep have the parents and teachers keep an eye on them, they would become immune to COVID-19 and probably every single one of the variations and variants that are coming along, the mutations. So instead of allowing them the freedom to be children, to grow, to be relatively free, and to be healthy and to be immune to COVID-19, they want to prove that we will obey. And of course, they want the last bit of money and power and dollars. But I think it's the ultimate step in breaking America. Zev, do you think that's an exaggeration? I see it as a critical turning point.
I think that once we have military tribunals, international tribunals, or we can call them Nuremberg 2.0, I think anyone who has been advocating for and coercing children should be publicly executed.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm not calling for public executions.
No, I'm not calling for vigilante.
No, I know.
The rule of law.
Go ahead, Zev. Let you respond. Go ahead.
They've committed capital murder, first-degree murder, premeditated murder.
They have.
Genocide against humanity. And if you look at the children, even just look at what the CDC says. Not that I'm a big fan of the CDC, but they say that the survival rate for children with no treatment from COVID-19 is 99.998%. I'll say it again, 99.998%.
Virtually zero deaths, really.
So that's right. So why would I inject a child who has virtually 0% chance of dying from COVID with something that causes blood clots, heart attacks, strokes, myocarditis, cancer, autoimmune diseases, ovarian and testicular dysfunction, infertility, and the potential genocidal reaction of antibody-dependent enhancement. Plus, doesn't even work. And so,
And plus, we don't even know what the worst is going to be, because you usually study a vaccine for at least 12 and often 20 years before you put it on the market so that you can have some sense of safety. So God knows what's even waiting with this GMO contraption that's called a vaccine.
I disagree. I think that the people that did this know exactly what's happening. And my proof, I have proof of this. In October of 2020, the FDA, which I think is a whorehouse, sells itself to the highest bidder and does not protect the interests of the American people at all. And their leadership, the two last commissioners of the FDA, Stephen Hahn and Scott Gottlieb, now work for Pfizer and Moderna. 50% of the budget comes from Big Pharma of the FDA. So what do you expect? This is obviously a biased organization that looks at the interests of the pharmaceutical industry. But the, and that's why I call them a whorehouse. But well, according to the FDA in October of 2020, they made a presentation to their scientists internally. It wasn't meant to be leaked, but it was leaked. And we have this presentation. And on slide 16 of that presentation, in October of 2020, two months prior to the deployment of these vaccines on the American people, that slide said it can cause heart attacks, strokes, myocarditis, neurological diseases like multiple sclerosis, Bell's palsy, epilepsy, ADEM, transverse myelitis, and many, many others. Now, if you look at the VAERS database that is designed to create a platform for doctors and people, patients, to file reports about the side effects, there's a 100% correlation with what the American public has been abused and assaulted and battered with and murdered with what the FDA presented to its scientists 2 months prior to the deployment of these vaccines. There's a term for that. It's called premeditated first degree murder and genocide. This is not like, oops, we didn't know, we're sorry. This is, we know exactly what's going to happen, and we did it anyway, and it's exactly what happened.
When I first heard Zev talking this way, I just wondered. And then I began doing my own research more and more for the book. And one of the things that I found that no one really talks much about is a whole string of animal studies. People think there haven't been animal studies. No, the FDA didn't recently do any like they should have. But there's been a whole string of animal studies going back almost a decade on these RNA and DNA vaccines and animals. And it displays everything Zev is talking about. And at no point were they able to escape from the fact that many animals were being killed by the vaccine, and many, especially older ones and vulnerable ones, and that in addition, many animals who got the vaccine and were then exposed to SARS-CoV, because they were making SARS-CoV viruses in labs for a number of years before 2020, for the COVID-19, that that the animals who had been vaccinated, many of them died when exposed to the actual disease, to the SARS-CoV virus. They so overreacted, as Zev was talking about, in their immune systems and other things going on. And when I say, Zev, by the way, that and God knows what will come, I say that simply because while they knew it was deadly, it knew it would cause all those things, we still can't anticipate over 10 or 20 years what's going to happen. And I imagine we agree on that. It's not going to be good. Now, just how much did they know? Why would they write something like they wrote in the presentation at the FDA? In 2020, a research team from a big university funded by Fauci was doing this research that Fauci denies, you know, that he ever supported, this gain-of-function research. And they concluded in a paper published right at the time that Fauci was and Bill Gates and that whole group was developing Operation Warp Speed and rushing the vaccines through. 2020 paper said the animal research shows that these vaccines are too dangerous to experiment on at all with humans. And our book, about COVID-19 and the global predators, cites all of this stuff. It's really, 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 really real. They know what they're doing. It is hard to face evil, but they know what they're doing. Zev, you have been developing a non-prescription, you call it a Z-Stack, that's useful in regard to COVID-19. Take a minute and tell us about it. We have 2 minutes left.
So I should send flowers to the ex-governor, I call him the ghoul Cuomo, you know, he's responsible for almost 20,000 nursing home deaths in the state of New York. And the reason why I say that is that I was using hydroxychloroquine, zinc, azithromycin, but in the first week of April of 2020, this ghoul issued an executive order blocking pharmacies from dispensing hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
And that was a direct attack against me and my practice. And the reason why I say that, I was the only one in the state doing it. And so they took away my ability to deliver zinc inside the cell, which was the key to the treatment. So I was forced to find another delivery system. So of all places on the NIH server, I found a substance called quercetin that together with vitamin C is an effective zinc ionophore or an effective zinc delivery system. It's like a gun and a bullet. Consider zinc the bullet and quercetin or hydroxychloroquine as the gun that delivers it. Now, I didn't know what quercetin was, so I Googled it and I took a step back and it was over the counter. And I realized, oh my God, I just found the cure to tyranny. Because there's two reasons why people die from COVID. One is the doctor, the moronic doctor they choose who delays treatment. And two is the tyrannical government that blocks access to care. So I open sourced all this information. I made it available for everyone. And then the feedback I got was, well, we can't find it all. We can't put the puzzle together. So I was asked to help people and put it all in one pill and make it more accessible. And that's what I did. And so that's the product. It's called Z-Stack. It has quercetin, vitamin C, zinc, and D. And the FDA only allows me to say that it's an immune supplement, immune booster, nutritional supplement. But in reality, quercetin, vitamin C, and zinc.
We've got 10 seconds. Where do folks get it?
ZStackLife.com.
ZStackLife.com. Thank you for being on. Folks, take heart. It is wonderful to work with people in the fight for liberty. Join us. Join everyone who's doing it.